Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Say, how's your lawn looking? Does it need a little TLC like mine does? Mine's in terrible shape right now. So I'm looking for some help from our guest today as well. Doug Soldat back with us. He's a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water resources, soil testing, irrigation. So he knows a lot and certainly is ready to answer your questions. So what do you have about improving your lawn? What do you want to know about reseeding, for example? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, we'd love to hear from you. And Doug Soldat, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Great to be back.
My lawn looks awful, and I'll tell you, well, there's a lot of reasons, but I had a pretty large round trampoline in the back end of my lawn for several years, and some friends took it out during that 90-degree weather, and it was really bare ground underneath it, and I didn't want to do anything then because it was just too darn hot. So
right.
I thought, well, wait till fall.
Yeah.
I did the right thing, or I'm doing the right thing?
Well, what came, did crabgrass come up? Did it fill in, or is it still bare soil?
A lot of it's bare soil. Some creeping Charlie is creeping in, of course.
Yeah, that's what it does. You did the right thing for sure. The optimum time to reseed and repair areas is August 15th through September 15th in Wisconsin, roughly. You know, you can probably start now if you want to get a head start, or you know, you can also wait probably till end of September if you get behind. But yeah, this is the perfect time to start growing grass.
Should I be taking a how should I be preparing the soil for that?
Yeah, good question. So you need to loosen the soil a bit, and you know, so clear away the creeping Charlie, any other weeds there. You can use a shovel or a rake. Just loosen the top inch or so. Then you spread the seed around the area. You can add a starter fertilizer to help it give a kick. And then you rake it in and then walk over it. And the walking is not to really compact it hard, but you definitely want some seed-to-soil contact to bury that seed. And then you put some mulch over it. I like to use straw mulch. The common mistake I see is people bury the area in straw. You actually want to be able to see half of the soil. So when you're looking down at the straw, half soil is about the right mix. And then just make sure to keep it moist, which may mean watering it at least once a day, maybe twice a day, and you'll start to see the grass come up.
And, you know, some areas of the state have had dry conditions, and watering is probably important, and some people wonder, when should we stop watering?
So in Wisconsin, I sometimes say you should never start watering your lawn. grasses very rarely need irrigation to survive in Wisconsin. That means that they'll certainly turn brown and stop growing, but when the rains return, it'll come back. And a lot of times we'll see people with in-ground irrigation systems that have them running on a timer will dramatically overwater their lawn, and they end up having all kinds of problems, a lot of disease problems that most people that don't water would never see, or shallow roots, and then, you know, all the problems that are associated with that. So, you know, right now in Madison, when I walk around, I'm starting to see dry patches in my lawn, and that's when you walk on the lawn and you can see your footprints. The grass doesn't spring back up. That's a good time to water to keep the grass green, if you want to. Otherwise, you know, I'm comfortable just letting it go brown and just waiting for the rain to come. It means I have to mow less.
There you go. Well, lots of callers online with questions, so let's go to the phones. Bob in Fitchburg, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. I have just tons of spots throughout my backyard in particular that are not level and just lumpy and bumpy for a variety of reasons. One of the main reasons is over the years, little dog kill spots. And then when the grass grows back in there, it's a little bit of a divot And so it's very uneven to walk on. And I'm wondering if there is a good way or a recommended way to try to level things out again.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's a really common question. And every kind of leveling issue is different. And if the dips are relatively large, it's more difficult to level out. So you'd be looking at, the most extreme solution would be to kill the lawn, till it up, and re-level it. Slightly less invasive or less work would be to bring in some top dressing, so a topsoil, maybe a compost, and rake that over the lawn in a thin layer. And naturally, when you're raking it, it'll come off of the high spots and end up in the low spots, and then the grass will grow through it, and eventually you'll have a more level surface. But it does take, it's not going to be a one-time thing. You'd have to probably do that a few times, depending on how deep those spots are. You can also do it by hand. You can just bring in topsoil in the low areas and bring it up, depending on the scale of it. So those are the two options for those. If you have smaller depressions, sometimes created by burrowing animals, you can roll the lawn. You get a roller, fill it with water. It's really heavy, and then you just roll your lawn back and forth, and it kind of smooths out the bumps. And if you do that, you just want to make sure that you do an aerification and you pull some cores in the fall to loosen up any compaction that you created by rolling the lawn. So those are a couple options for you.
There you go, Bob. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Don in Sheboygan. Hi, Don.
How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Hi. My question, I see a lot of these chemical trucks out spraying people's lawns all over Sheboygan. And I wonder, are those things safe? Or does the runoff from that, go into our water and things like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big question, and that's a huge direction of our research program here at UW-Madison. Dr. Paul Koch in plant pathology and myself spent a lot of time looking at, what is the fate of the pesticides and the fertilizers that are being applied in the environment, and it's complicated. It's not an easy yes/no answer. Certainly, we can overapply chemicals and fertilizers and create environmental damage. The trucks that are over are regulated by the state, and they're regulated by the EPA, and they're following rules. Or hopefully, they're following the rules of application. The EPA determines whether or not the chemicals they're applying has a reasonable degree of safety. That means that the benefits outweigh the risks. So nothing in life is risk-free, as we know, and that's true for pesticides as it is with other things. I'm a fertility specialist, so the fertilizer thing is what I'll focus on here. Is it's not allowed to apply phosphorus to lawns unless you have a soil test showing the need, and those lawn care companies are applying fertilizers that do not contain phosphorus. And phosphorus is what gets into our freshwater water bodies and creates algal blooms. So that's good. But the other thing that's more complicated is that nitrogen, which is what they're applying in the fertilizer, thickens the lawn and gives it good density. And we know that thick lawns have less runoff and detached soil particles, which can soil particles carry phosphorus into the lakes and rivers. So our research and my research and the Wayne Cusso, the professor before me, has shown that some fertilization actually benefits the amount of phosphorus that gets in the lake or reduces it. So you want to get that amount right. And what is the right amount? It depends, but it's usually about 2 to 3 applications of nitrogen fertilizer per year. It gives you that optimal thickness without running the risk of excessive nitrogen contamination to the water as well. So yeah, it's a complicated topic. Good question, and some people have differing opinions on it, which is another aspect to it all.
Yeah, if you were going to use a lawn care company, is there something to look for? Are they, is there a professional association or something that you can kind of use as a benchmark?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask those questions to the question that, Don asked here. I mean, that's a good question to start off with is, hey, what happens with all that stuff? And then and see how they answer it. They're, the Wisconsin Turfgrass Association is a professional association that is supports our research. And, of course, they're listening to us when we're talking about the environmental impacts and the best practices. So you'd look for one that's a member of the Wisconsin Turfgrass Association. I guess if you ask them, like, what type of practices do they have in place to protect the environment, hopefully you'd be looking for a good answer there. They should be talking about no phosphorus in their fertilizer, and hopefully slow-release nitrogen is a big one. So companies that use slow-release nitrogen, it's a little bit more expensive, but it's better for the turf grass, it's better for the environment. And also they shouldn't be applying the pesticides every time they come out. They should be scouting, and they should be using integrated pest management. So those are some of the words that you're looking for in a lawn care company that that's doing their part to protect the environment.
Great. Don, thanks again. Appreciate it. Kathy and Madison, we'll go to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I live in a condominium association. And several years ago, we had a resident who was a homeopathic doctor, I think, and he advocated, and I supported him, for stopping our chemical treatments of our lawn. We had a company that came and sprayed from a truck, like the previous caller talked about. And I eat a lot of wild plants that grow on our property. And I also have a small garden, and I didn't want any chemicals in my garden. So we've been happily chemical-free for several years. Now we had a wall repaired, and we have a small area of grass that's been reseeded. And the landscaper recommended, you know, in addition to watering to establish it, that maybe later we'd want to put on some weed and feed. My question is there anything that can be put on a lawn to maybe kill weeds, because our lawn is more weedy than it used to be, without harming people like me that eat things that are either in the lawn or in close proximity to it?
Sure. Yeah, great question. And like I said, people are all over the spectrum on what's an acceptable amount of risk. The EPA says, hey, these chemicals can be used according to label, and that's acceptable. But obviously, some people have a different risk tolerance. And so we study that here at UW-Madison. We have a couple publications online at the Learning Store that talk about alternative and reduced risk and organic lawn care to the traditional methods. And so I'll give you a little synopsis over to your question is, yeah, if you want to kill weeds in an alternative, non-traditional way, look for a product that contains iron, H-E-D-T-A, or H-E-D-T-A, T-D-A. Yeah, anyway, it's an iron, you basically kill the weeds with iron toxicity, which is a nutrient, you know, it's a big component of your blood and things like that. So it's relatively low risk to humans, very, very low risk to humans. But certain weeds can't tolerate amounts of it like grasses can. So that those products have performed exceptionally well in our trials. It won't kill everything. For like crabgrass, for example, you want to look for a product that contains corn gluten meal, and you want to apply that in about April in Wisconsin, so in the early spring when the forsythia are in full bloom. So that'll help keep the crabgrass out, and then the iron HEDTA herbicide will kill the dandelions and the clover. But you have to apply it more frequently than you would a traditional chemical. But we found really pretty good results with those techniques that get away from the traditional chemicals.
And you would combine that, I would guess, Doug, with a regular fertilizer program to keep that lawn grass thick.
That's right. I'm so glad you brought that up. So the best herbicide you could use is actually nitrogen fertilizer. And again, completely safe from a human's health standpoint. And, you know, you're putting it on your garden as well. But keeping the grass thick takes away the opportunity for weeds to come in. And so 2 to 3 applications of nitrogen per year is that level that most lawns need to keep the weeds at bay. So keep that lawn thick with nitrogen, and you end up using far less weed control products.
All right, Kathy, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. We'll take another call in just a minute. A reminder to you, Doug Soldat, our guest today, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, PhD in horticulture. Great to talk with him about lawn care today. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat, with us to talk about lawns, fall lawn preparation, and certainly to answer your lawn questions. Join in, open line or two at 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Weed and feed came up in a question, Doug, and we also had an email from Dan about this. He emailed that this was his first spring he's ever applied a weed and feed, a superior product, and it seems that he has more weeds than ever before. He has about 2 acres, which was an overseeded field. This was also the worst year ever for Japanese beetles. Is there a treatment for the lawn to help control?
Yeah, I don't like weed and feed products in general because they have it's a fertilizer particle and then there's herbicide that's in a granular form. And when you're trying to kill a weed, you want to make sure that herbicide, whether it is an organic alternative or a traditional one, is on the leaf where it can be absorbed. And those particles, some of them will hit the leaf and some will fall off and miss. So we always get much better control, and I'm talking, 20 to 50% better control when we use liquid products. So weed and feeds are not my favorite. The other thing is that, the weeds get worse over time, and so it's likely that, if you're not fertilizing your lawn and keeping it dense and doing those good practices, you get this kind of downward spiral. So I'm not surprised that, the weeds got bad enough where he made a decision to do something and the product was not the best, and you end up with still a lot of weeds. So it can be a little bit disappointing sometimes. I would look for liquid products. I would also, the first thing I would do is just fertilize your lawn more 2 to 3 times a year if you're not doing that. And often what'll happen is you'll notice that the grass starts to outcompete some of the weeds, and you'll have a heck of a lot less weeds to kill the next time around.
Yeah, good points. Nancy in Middleton, thank you for calling.
Hi, my husband and I have a lawn that's dying, and it's spreading. I had a lawn care service the other day, and the guy walked over. We thought perhaps it was grub damage, and he seemed to confirm that the roots were dead. My husband did try to check to see if he could find any grubs, but the guy said that during the day, they're down by the roots, which are a deepish, a couple, 3 inches, and then come up higher during the later in the day. So we're not sure that it's grubs. But the question is, is there a way that we can confirm that it's grub damage from Japanese beetles? And we've done a lot to try to attract wildlife to our yard. I hate to have to treat the whole lawn for Japanese beetles, and then we have birds that are being poisoned by, getting things out of our lawn. So it's kind of a dilemma. Do we spot treat where they were this year, and when would be the best time to do it, and what product should we use? Sorry, lots of
Yeah, okay. good stuff. So grub damage can be relatively rare in Wisconsin, but it absolutely occurs. And what you've described, where the roots are gone and the grass pulls up, does sound quite a bit like grub damage. But what we'll always say is confirm it before you do anything about it. And so you got to find the grubs. And what I would say is I don't expect you to find them now, because if it's Japanese beetles, they have this life cycle where they lay their eggs around the 4th of July. So think about that as happening last year. And then those grubs are tiny, and they molt, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they dig down deep over winter, and they survive. And they come up in the spring. So this is spring of 2020. 2020, they started coming up and getting really fat by eating your roots. And it rained a lot in the spring, so you didn't notice that your roots were dead. And then they emerge from the soil in June, and they fly around and they chew on your ornamentals. And then they come back and lay eggs again around the 4th of July. So the timing where those grubs are most susceptible to an insecticide is around the 4th of July when they're really, really tiny. Any other time where you try to kill them, you typically, they're too big. They can survive it. The chemicals aren't strong enough to kill them when they're large. And so what the point you're at now is not much you can do. You can reseed your lawn. You can repair it the best you can. But you want to look for those grubs next spring. And you can do that by just kind of digging up a little section. And the threshold amount that we typically use is about 10 grubs per square foot. So, I mean, that's a lot. If you imagine a square foot that you dug up, and, you know, finding 10 grubs, that's quite a bit in a small area. If you have that, then you're going to want to take pictures of the grubs. You can have them confirmed through the turfgrass diagnostic lab here at Wisconsin, or you can use the insect diagnostic lab at Wisconsin, and we can tell you what type of grub it is. It's likely Japanese beetle, but you know, we have to see the pictures, and then at that point, the TDL or the insect diagnostic lab can give you a recommendation to suit your specific situation. But that's kind of the overview. You know, keep an eye open for grubs because if they laid eggs in 4th of July, they might start getting bigger and you can start to see them. They're called white grubs. They have these little C-shaped bodies. And you know, you can look for them into the fall, but right now I wouldn't do anything. I would just reseed that lawn, kind of like we talked about at the beginning of the program, and get some new grass growing in those areas and then attack it next year.
All right. There you go, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. And again, if you type in the search engine, UW Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, it's going to pop up.
Yep.
Yeah,
or
for sure.
Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab. Both of those diagnostic labs could help you out with this situation.
Excellent. Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate it. Martha in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Martha.
Yes. Hi, guys. Okay. Confession. I'm not a yard person. I'm not a lawn person, like bushes and plants, but Creeping Charlie, that's the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me at all. It's taking over and I've pulled some of it by hand, but that seems to destroy all the rest of the lawn that it takes with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't use any chemicals. Is there anything natural? I mean, it doesn't bother me at all, but I'm thinking down the road, if it takes over my whole yard and I need to sell my house and a yard person wants to buy it, then it's kind of devalued. So help me out here. What can I do without putting any chemicals down to control it?
So the best thing you can do is sell your house in the winter when there's 2 feet of snow, and then they'll never know. So there's not much you can do. Do you have a lot of shade?
It's about 50-50. Half the yard is sun and half the yard is shade.
Okay, so that's not the worst situation. But typically in shade, ground ivy or Creeping Charlie is just, it's the ultimate competitor. Grasses evolved in open grasslands where they have lots of sun. They're just not well suited for shade, where Creeping Charlie is perfectly suited for shade. So from an ecological balance, you're never going to win. Even if I told you that there was a great organic product that would eliminate Creeping Charlie, it would just come back because the grass isn't thick enough to outcompete it. In the sunny areas, that's not true. In the sunny areas, you can maintain it with in that situation. But you know, you can try the iron HEDTA products, which is a non-traditional herbicide. It's not considered a conventional one, if that suits you. But other than that, you know, and that's going to be a constant battle. You're going to always be putting it down. What I would do if you're really worried about your home value and moving is I would just hire a company to apply a traditional chemical before you go, as you list it, and then put down the product, and the ground ivy will go away from that application. But Yeah, it's a tough one. If you don't mind it, I'd just suggest putting up with it. And if you're ready to move, you can rest assured that somebody can get rid of it pretty quickly for you while you're on your way out.
Yeah, and again, back to fertilizing. if you do the fertilizing that Doug's been suggesting, that'll help your lawn compete, won't it, Doug?
It'll help in the sunny area. But the thing is, I mean, when the grass is thin in the shade, fertilizing it in the shade actually makes it worse.
Oh.
Because it doesn't have enough leaf area, and fertilizing it gives it more leaf area, and there's not enough sun, and it's just a negative cycle. So I like to say find other plants to grow in the shade, or mulch more. Talking about shade, though, if you do want to reseed an area in the shade, chewings fescue, hard fescue, creeping red fescue, those are by far the best choices. They're the best suited for shady areas. Kentucky bluegrass does pretty poorly in the shade.
All right. There we go. Thank you very much for calling, Martha. Appreciate it. Tim in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hello. For the past two summers, my lawn has turned orange around the beginning of August. When I go out and walk in the lawn, my shoes get covered with orange powder, and it's just a big mess. So I'm thinking it's some type of rust, and I guess I need more nitrogen for my lawn. So can I put some nitrogen fertilizer on now? Would that help?
Yeah, you can be the guest next time on this show. That's exactly right. You got rust. It happens in August and into September, and rust happens when the grass isn't growing very much. And so ways to get rid of the rust are to get it growing again, and nitrogen's a really good way to do that. Also irrigation. So I have rust in my lawn. I was just looking at it this morning, and it's drying out. It's not growing. I haven't mowed my lawn very often, but I got rust. It won't kill anything. It turns your shoes orange and it kind of looks weird, but it goes away when the grass starts growing. And if you want to get that process kickstarted, go ahead and fertilize it, kick on a little bit of irrigation, and that rust will eventually go away.
There you go, Tim. Thanks. Sue in Highland, your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hello. I have a question about, I don't know if it's moles or groundhogs. We have a beautiful lawn. It's the only thing I haven't killed so far. And the last month or two, we suddenly have 20 big round holes. And one of our neighbors suggested dynamite. But short of dynamite, we've tried putting coffee grounds on the holes, and then it seems like they moved to making a new one. And I wondered what we could do about that.
And what's the size of the holes?
About 12 inches around. Oh. They're circular. And they start out as like mounds of loose dirt. And then eventually they get packed down and they're like dried dirt, flat.
Wow. Yeah, 12-inch hole. That's a big one. I would say that's in the ground, in the groundhog category. That's a new one for me. I've never had a groundhog question.
And skunks don't do it that way.
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
It looks a lot messier when it's a skunk. Something that may be, I wonder if there are grubs or something in the lawn that something is digging up and looking for.
Yeah, it could be. I think with raccoon, we've had raccoon questions before, and I think the trapping them and relocating them is when they get that big is probably the best way to go. I mean, I would hope that you get a look at them sometime and figure out what it is. And then David Drake's the urban wildlife specialist here at UW-Madison. He's really good. He knows how to deal with any kind of critter in the urban environment. But, just like anything else, let's get an identification on it, and then we can go from there.
And you can use, if you've got a friend or maybe you have a camera, one of these cameras that you can kind of stick up in your lawn that will take photos of whatever's coming through in the evening. And that would be a quick way to identify what the animal is. I think that has worked very well for a lot of people, these outdoor cameras that you can attach to, and I'm blanked on the name suddenly for the cameras, but they're
trail cams.
You can borrow one or maybe even rent one. I don't know, might be able to rent one or just purchase one. I think you can get them for fairly cheap,
right?
At least then you'd know what you were dealing with, and then David Drake could help with how to get rid of it.
I can't think of anything I could recommend that you do your lawn that's gonna discourage an animal that large from living where he's living.
All right, get a trail cam, Sue, and find out, or be observant. It's probably something happening at night when you can't normally see, so that's why trail cam might be the best bet. Cindy in Lake Mills, your turn. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I have a solution for the moles and the woodchucks. I had hundreds of them in my backyard, and, I mean, they were literally out during the day, and I controlled them by using the square green mouse stuff. I put that down their hole for a straight week, 1 to 2, depending on how many was in there, and mine are gone. They love that sweet stuff like the mice do. And then, of course, what it does, they bleed internally. And I am now less holes and no more woodchucks or moles.
Oh, there you go.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy.
Sounds easier than dynamite.
Yeah, that's for sure. Logan in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Just one simple question, sir. Your comment on the use of Roundup as a weed killer.
On lawns.
On weeds.
Yeah, so Roundup is a non-selective herbicide, which means it's going to kill everything it comes in contact with. And so every year we seem to find some people that make the mistake of spot treating their lawn weeds with Roundup, and they get these dead patches everywhere where weeds usually regrow through. So I don't recommend Roundup as a treatment unless you are going to kill the entire area, in which case it is a very good option in terms of reseeding. But there is also, following the news, there's a lot of debate going on over the use of Roundup, and I'm not here to comment on that other to say that there are Roundup alternatives that you can use to also entirely kill the lawn. So you can cover it with plastic and just let the heat do it. You can use vinegar containing products that will burn down all the existing vegetation, or you can use Roundup depending on your preferences. But those are all ways to kill the entire area usually for reseeding.
There you go, Logan. Thank you very much for calling. Lori emailed that she's working on extending the white clover in her lawn. It's doing well where it's already taken hold, but where it still is a work in progress, dandelions come in and outcompete the clover.
Yes.
Any chemical application she can use that will kill dandelions but not clover.
Yeah, try that. I think one of the brand names is Fiesta. It's the Iron HEDTA. Iron X is another brand name of it. But that's really effective against dandelions and marginally effective against clover. Of course, clover grows through stolons. It's even if you ding some of the clover up, it's really good at regrowing. But that's awesome. I'm glad you're trying to encourage white clover, because I've been talking a lot about the importance of fertilizing Kentucky bluegrass lawns to keep them thick. Well, at our research station, we've been playing around with just growing clover and Kentucky bluegrass together, and the clover takes nitrogen from the air and gives some of it to the Kentucky bluegrass. And so we found really good density with no fertilizer for, it's been 10 years on some of these plots now.
Wow.
And so if you don't like the idea of putting anything on your lawn, including nitrogen fertilizer, mixing white clover in is a really good strategy.
Nancy in Grafton has a question, I believe. Nancy, hello.
Hello. About 3 years ago, my neighbor across the street had a company come in and take care of her lawn. Well, they sure did, because every spring now for 3 years. It takes about 2.5, or at least about 2 months for that grass to get green because there's all these brown spots all over it. And I don't know what the heck they did or what they sprayed, but hey, she's got them coming back all the time, you know. Doesn't make any sense, but there's some reason that something happened on that lawn to make those brown spots like that all over where the grass doesn't come up for a long time.
Hmm. Typically, when we see things that don't green up or patches, it's a different species of grass. For example, if you have a lawn that's infested with crabgrass, that will die at the first hard frost. There'll be a bare patch over winter. Nothing will grow there in the spring, and then crabgrass will start popping up in June. Tall fescue is another grass that I like that we've been seeing more and more of in the environment, but it greens up like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks later than Kentucky bluegrass. And it also gets hit harder by the snow molds, which gives a brown appearance. There's zoysia grass. There's a lot, I could go on and on, but there's a lot of different plants and grasses that live in lawns that can do that. So to figure out what it is or how it got there, we'd have to get an identification on it. But what you're describing is, not too unusual.
Yeah, there we go, Nancy. Thank you for calling. Diane in Mercer, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I heard that lady talk about putting the green stuff into the holes for the woodchucks and the moles or voles. And some of that stuff's neurotoxins, and your dog will also like to eat it. And if you don't see them eating it, by the time you know they ate it, it's too late. Their brain will swell and they will die.
Yeah. So always a good reminder when you're working with chemicals, for sure, Doug.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an advocate of trapping and removing, relocating rather than for the same reason the caller mentions, the risks of the unintended targets.
You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk as we take a look at your lawn with our guest, Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science, a PhD in horticulture, specializes in turf grasses and urban soils, among other things. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And callers online, let's take a call here from Gary or Jerry in Hudson, Wisconsin. Hi, thanks for calling.
Good afternoon or good morning. I'm not sure where we're at yet. Good morning. Anyway, we have a large yard. It's probably an acre and a half of just lawn. And when we bought the house, a new septic system had been put in. They brought in 10 loads of topsoil that was infested with foxtail. Hmm. So now we have a lush green lawn that is at least a half foxtail. We haven't had a lawn service for a while because of our dog and also the wildlife issue. But our lawn service told me that the pre-emergent that they put down doesn't do anything to foxtail. Is that true? And is there something we can do to kill now probably like half the grass in the lawn is foxtail and I don't know what to do with it.
That's interesting. I am fairly confident that so foxtail is a grassy weed, warm season grassy weed, and I'm fairly confident that pre-emergent herbicide will control it. So that would be my guess, is get a second opinion on that. My opinion is it will work. And then fertilize your lawn, use an organic fertilizer, whatever you want to do to get it thicker, and that'll keep the foxtail out, because your Kentucky bluegrass is going to be a much better competitor than foxtail in the long term. You just have to, like you said, it was brought in, had a huge head start. But if you use a pre-emergent herbicide and then fertilize your lawn 2 to 3 times, I'm gonna guess that you're gonna see a dramatic decrease in the foxtail.
There you go. Thank you for calling. Jay in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. Thank you. I've got a perennial problem with my lawn. It'll look beautiful up until roughly the middle of July, and then in the front, side, and back, where I have either full sun, partial shade, or even less than that, the grass will develop between 2 and 3 square foot yellow dead patches. And as I said, I give it more than an inch of rain or watering weekly, and I mow at 3 inches or higher, but this keeps reoccurring. Any ideas?
It sounds like a patch disease, and there are a handful of them. You mentioned you water it an inch a week. I would say that's exacerbating it. Typically what we see, we don't see a ton of bad disease issues in lawns, but when we do, they're typically associated with irrigation systems. So diseases like high humidity and moisture, and so those conditions can make that worse. So I would recommend backing off almost entirely on the irrigation. And then when you see those patches, you can take pictures and submit them to the Turf Grass Diagnostic Lab. And then with a little bit of more information, the lab manager can likely pinpoint which disease it is. And then while we almost never recommend applying a fungicide, there are cultural practices that we recommend that can minimize that occurrence. So one of the cultural practices, like I'm recommending without even seeing it, is to back off on irrigation. Things like some like less nitrogen, some like more nitrogen. So we want to get an identification on that patch, but it certainly sounds like a disease is hitting your lawn.
All right. Jay, does that help?
Yes, that sounds like it could be accurate, because my neighbors who do absolutely nothing to maintain their lawn have greener grass than I do after, say, the typical July drought that we often have. And we've had real high humidity, so that sounds like I'm probably overdoing it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jay, for calling. Well, Randy in De Pere, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hey, how you doing, Larry?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thanks. Say, kind of like the last guy when he talked about his neighbors not really doing a lot with their lawn, it seems that my neighbors and I all cut at a different level our lawn. So I'm wondering if you guys can give me an idea of what's the optimal height to cut my lawn at spring, summer, and fall, Larry?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, the optimal height, you know, again, it's a personal preference. I have the same thing. I have neighbors that mow lower than I do. They probably don't understand why I mow mine as high. But yeah, I like to go as high as you can. So as high as you can tolerate. So my lawn is about probably a little more than 3 inches. And the reason over the long term, you're going to have fewer weed issues. You're going to have to put down less nitrogen and less water. You have deeper roots. It's just the taller you can mow your grass, the healthier it's going to be. But like I said, some people just say, hey, that 3.5 just looks too shaggy for me, so I got to go lower. And our research has shown you don't want to go any lower than 2.5 inches. You start getting below that, you're stressing the plant out constantly. But somewhere between 2.5 and 3.5 is where you want to be, and the taller you can go, the better. The other thing I'll say is have a sharp mower blade. That's really, really important. So if you're hitting rocks and sticks, take it off, sharpen it, keep it sharp. But the sharper your mower blade, the better your lawn's going to look.
There you go, Randy. Thank you very much for calling. Well, Cindy in Oshkosh, your turn now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My daughter and I have an ongoing debate about when to water.
All right, let's settle it.
The time of day.
All right. What's the best time to water?
Yeah.
So for me, it's almost never. That's the first thing. but if you do have to water, which I say should be only, you should count on one hand the number of times you should water your lawn in Wisconsin. And the best time to do it is typically in the very early morning before dawn. If you do it during the day, you lose a lot to evaporation, and it's also windier during the day, so it's blowing it in spots you don't want. If you do it in the evening, what you're creating is a really high humidity situation for the entire night, which encourages diseases. And we've been talking about diseases in irrigation all day. So the best time to water is around sunrise or just before sunrise, which is pretty inconvenient for most people, but that's the best time.
All right, there you go, Cindy. Bill in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to ask if your guests had any ideas on soil amendments that might be friendly to insects and plants, but detract burrowing animals.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know that there, you know, I don't do research in that area. I'm not sure that there's a lot out there anyway. So I don't know. You know, I think my favorite, in talking about soil amendments in general, compost is by far my favorite amendment, but I don't think that's going to discourage anything. I have heard that applications of malorganite will discourage certain animals from digging and burrowing. But again, I don't have a ton of information on that.
All right, Bill, maybe milorganite, but maybe not. Might be worth a try. Steve in Madison, hello.
Hi there. Hi. I was wondering, we have a very small backyard, but it's been completely covered by Creeping Charlie, and I don't want to use like Roundup to get rid of it, and it's too much to just pull it. Can you cover it like with a tarp, quite a few tarps, and then like take it off after like a year or so, and then like till up the backyard and reseed it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's perfect. You won't even need a year. But yeah, tarps do wonders for that non-selective control. It'll kill everything underneath it.
And how long would you need to leave it on?
We're talking in the several weeks period here. I would guess, but definitely not the entire year. So weeks to months, and you'll kill everything underneath it.
Yeah, but I have to warn you, Steve, I did that many years ago to a different lawn at a different place I lived. And you know what? In a year or so, the Creeping Charlie kept creeping right back in.
Yeah, it's tough to knock down. I mean, it's a constant battle. Definitely.
I always have lawns that are a little too shady, I think.
Yeah.
Jill in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn.
Hello. I'm wondering if we can do anything about ragweed in a clay-rich yard with Creeping Charlie, but I'm not going to worry about that.
Hmm. So even after you mow it, you still have ragweed that persists?
Yeah.
Huh.
That's a new one. Yeah, usually mowers take care of the vast majority of weeds, including ragweed, but maybe this stuff is learning to be dwarf and avoid the mower. Sometimes we see ragweed, like in the midsummer when the grass isn't growing and you're not mowing very often, you get a few ragweed plants that come up, but I haven't seen a ragweed that stays for a long time. You can spot spray it with a conventional herbicide that kills lawn weeds. You can also use an alternative one like the iron HEDTA, which will take it out. But other than that, I think those are kind of your options. Hopefully maybe mow it a little bit lower and the ragweed can't tolerate that. But yeah.
There you go. There you go. Thank you, Jill. Dee emailed that she has several patches of creeping bentgrass in her lawn. how and when can she get rid of it? She has a clay soil. She mows high, doesn't irrigate.
Yeah, creeping bent grass is a tough one. I'd say even tougher than creeping Charlie. And I get questions about this all the time. Unfortunately, a bad news. There is really nothing you can do other than kill it non-selectively, so Roundup or tarps or vinegar, and then start over. And it also tends to come back. So it has a very distinctive look, though, and it is susceptible to pulling. So once it's a large patch, you can't pull it. But I'm saying after you start over and you resod or reseed that area, go ahead and just pick those plants out as soon as you see them. But creeping bentgrass is a tough one.
Doug Soldat, our guest today. Doug is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison with a PhD in horticulture, specializing in turf grass, urban soils, water resources, soil testing, and landscape irrigation. Always great to have Doug on our program, especially for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. To have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat. Doug, a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Always great to have him come by to talk about your lawn needs. And we'd love to hear from you. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And a few emails to take care of here, Doug. Zach in Onalaska emailed that he has to deal with quackgrass in his lawn, several patches. Was thinking he just needed to nuke the site from orbit.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, quackgrass is another one of those top three worst weeds. Quackgrass spreads with these huge underground rhizomes, which means that even when you do use a non-selective program to get rid of it, they usually grow from way deep under the soil. One thing to try is quackgrass hates a little bit of love. So, you know, I have been advocating against this, but with quackgrass, if you mow it a little bit shorter, get it down to 2-2.5 inches, get the fertility up a bit, you start to see that grass fade away. It doesn't do really good under love TLC. Other than that, there's not much else you can do except for completely redoing the lawn.
Oh, Bob emailed to ask how he can remove a monoculture lawn and replace it with a variety of species. And then he wonders what's wrong with crabgrass, creeping Charlie, is it just the names?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a really good point. Weeds have, it's a plant out of place. So it depends on what you think is out of place. I will say crabgrass is an environmentally damaging weed that should be controlled because it goes away over the winter and the spring, leaving bare soil. And then when we get the rains in the fall and the spring, the bare soil erodes and gets into the lake. You got to get rid of crabgrass. There's nothing good about that grass. Now for the other ones, ground ivy, creeping Charlie, it's fine. It's a ground cover. It's protecting the soil. It doesn't go away. It persists. Clover, excellent weed, quote unquote weed, that forms a nice dense ground cover and provides pollen for pollinators. It's a perspective. Dandelions have a taproot, you know, so things to do for a lawn is to understand which weeds are good and what they're doing and which ones are bad, like crabgrass or foxtail. We've done some experiments where we take a Kentucky bluegrass lawn and we overseed with white clover, and we've had some good success with that. You take a power rake, or sometimes they're called like a dethatcher rake. run it over your lawn a couple times, and then put down clover at 4 to 8 pounds per acre. And within the next year, you're going to start to see clover coming in and starting to provide free nitrogen fertilizer to your lawn. So dandelions will come in naturally. So it's all about your perspective, but it is important to know that those warm season grassy weeds can be really damaging to the environment.
Carrie in Madison, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I was wondering, is there a non-chemical herbicide that I could use in the spring or maybe the fall? I've tried corn gluten meal, so I wondered if there was something else or if there isn't, is there a best way to use that?
Right. So there's one of the issues with kind of organic reduced risk lawn care is there's just not a lot of really effective alternative to conventional products. Corn gluten meal is one. You have to get the timing exactly right with it, which means that you're looking at when the soil temperatures are 55 degrees. So get yourself a soil thermometer, or I like to use the forsythia bush. When the forsythia are in full bloom, that's about the time you want to apply the corn gluten meal. And that'll prevent a majority of the crabgrass and other spring emerging weeds from germinating. For the other weeds, the ones that are already up, the iron HEDTA is a good alternative product that you spray on those weeds. So Fiesta, Iron X, there's a handful of brand names, but they all contain iron HEDTA, and they're effective in our trials. The optimal timing is in late fall. So if you do them in the spring, they work marginally, but if you wait till fall, they're really good at burning down the weeds.
All right, there you go, Carrie. Thank you. Cheryl in Conover, your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Larry. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. Hey, I have a perfect solution for people that have the acre yards. I bought a home up in Conover a number of years ago, and it's 2.4 acres, and I couldn't understand why anyone would want to mow 2.4 acres. So we only mow around our house about 30, 40 feet around the house. And I have now the most beautiful natural effect. I have black-eyed Susans. I have daisies. I have milkweed and butterflies. Yes, I have purple thistle, but it's so beautiful when it's in a field. And we don't have to mow and waste gas, nor do we have to put any chemical on anything. We just let it go natural. And it looks beautiful. And it's mowed right around our house. So that looks beautiful, too.
All right, Cheryl.
I like it.
Yeah, there's, and it's surprising if you just leave it alone. A lot of those things like coneflowers just seem to appear out of nowhere.
Yeah, and if you've been to a golf course in the last 5 or 10 years, that's what they're doing, too. They're taking the areas that they used to mow and mow and mow, and they're just not mowing them anymore and maintaining these natural areas now that add value and take less maintenance. It makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you, Cheryl. Appreciate it. Mary Ann in Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have shallow topsoil, so I fertilize the lawn 4 times a year, and this is the time to put the third application of 4 down. Although with the lawn so stressed and dried out looking at this time, and there's only a chance of a thunderstorm on Sunday, wondering if it would be too stressful on the lawn to put the fertilizer down, or if I should wait for wetter conditions.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up. So you do want to wait. We can say almost always Memorial Day is a good time to fertilize. Almost always Labor Day is, but in the 4th of July and August period, it depends on the weather. And if it's dry and hot and the grass is stressed, it's probably not the right thing. You want to wait at least until you get some moisture before you use that fertilizer. Otherwise, it'll burn out the grass even faster.
Yeah. You know, we used to talk about fertilizing around Halloween, but that recommendation, has that gone away?
Yeah, we're getting away from that a bit. We did some research a number of years ago, where we found that because the grass isn't really growing around Halloween, and when grass isn't growing, it's not good at taking up fertilizer. So it's not growing. Sometimes it's growing 4th of July, sometimes not, but it's almost never growing around Halloween. So if you do need another fertilizer application in the fall, we think October 1st is kind of the latest you want to do that.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Quite a few emails to take, too, here. Pam emailed to ask if she spots seeds now, should she fertilize?
Yeah, you can. That won't hurt anymore or anything, and it'll probably help the seed go. What I would say, when I do those little repair patches, I like perennial ryegrass. Now, normally, I hate it. I don't want to have perennial ryegrass a lawn, but for those little patches, I like it because it germinates quickly, it fills it in, and then over time, the surrounding Kentucky bluegrass or creeping red fescue will fill in and replace that perennial ryegrass. So perennial ryegrass is a good patch species, and sure, you can absolutely fertilize it to give it a kickstart.
Yeah, I've done that, and it, you're right. It works great. It works great. Well, Aaron emailed wondering what's the difference between Creeping Charlie and Creeping Jenny, or is there a difference at all?
Ooh, I don't know Creeping Jenny.
I think it's another name for Creeping Charlie. But
is it? Okay. I can Google it now. It looks like it is a different plant. It looks like more like an ornamental, but it has a very similar appearance. So it looks like it is different, but in the same type of creeping ground cover family.
Yeah. Glenn emailed that he adds dish soap to 2,4-D to get rid of Creeping Charlie. He says the dish soap takes the waxy film off so the 2,4-D can work. He uses it once a month for 3 months. It's worked for him for 40 years.
Yeah. So I don't mean to suggest that that traditional conventional chemicals can't control ground ivy. And the soap trick is, some herbicides will contain a surfactant like that will do that same thing. And sure, it works. But, you know, what the email just said is how often was it again?
Three times a year.
Right. It's a continuous battle. And some people look at that and say, oh, it doesn't make sense. But for sure, we can get rid of ground ivy using methods like that. It's just it's overkill for a lot of people, but certainly an option.
Paul in Mequon, your turn now. Hi, Paul.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to know, we've got most of the lawn is dead. We got a pink fungus on it. We got a white thread fungus. We got kind of dark spots that I believe anthracnose, and most of the it's not very large. But our well is right in the center of the yard, and I wonder, are there any organic controls that you can use to control those types of fungus?
So anthracnose and red thread, there's maybe another one in there. Those are low nitrogen diseases, meaning that they thrive under low, when plants have lower nitrogen. So one thing I would try is to just increase the fertility around those sites where the disease is hitting. So do you fertilize those now?
I did. Actually, I fertilized around Memorial Day with Milorganite.
Okay.
And it actually got worse as soon as I fertilized.
It did, okay. Which may or may not have been related. Sometimes we associate those increases with something we did, but it could have just been the weather change. I would say go ahead and it still persists now. I would, if the soil moisture is good, like we just talked about with the last caller, fertilize it again. And if it's still getting worse or not going away, contact the Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab, and they are experts in diagnosing the diseases, and then they can give you a really specific recommendation. But it's difficult to do over the phone because there's just so many potential options.
Yeah. And again, how do we do that? UW Turfgrass
Diagnostic Lab, TDL, Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab. Type that into Google. It'll come up. There's a website. It'll tell you how to submit a sample.
Thank you, Paul. Steve in Ripon, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a crabgrass problem. I had my septic drain field redone this winter and this spring replanted Kentucky bluegrass, and it's like over 50% crabgrass now at this point. So I was just kind of wondering, like, what kind of timing should I look at for killing that off and replanting and trying again?
So crabgrass, once it becomes really big and established, it's very, very difficult to control. If you would like to try it now, an herbicide containing the active ingredient quinclorac is your best bet, and that will at least stop it from growing and stunt it and possibly kill it, depending on how large it is. But after that, the cold weather will kill it, and you just want to make sure that you get a pre-emergent herbicide down at the right time next year, and that'll prevent all those seeds that it's going to produce from re-germinating. At the same time, you want to focus on fertility this fall and thickening up the Kentucky bluegrass to outcompete the crabgrass. But yeah, quinclorac now, fertilize it now in Labor Day, and then get a pre-emergent down in April next year, and you should be in good shape.
There you go, Steve. Thanks. Another Steve, this one from Menominee Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I'd like to know if your guest has heard of a chemical called Tenacity, and you can use it on, well, a lot of different things. You can use it on nuts edge. You can use it as a pre-emergent, you can use it as a post-emergent, all kinds of different things. It kind of sounds like a miracle drug, and it's plant-based. So I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of it.
I have heard of it, and I love it, and we use it. I don't like to give, and Steve is probably realizing that there are many answers I've given that Tenacity could have been thrown out there, which is true, but it is not a very good user-friendly chemical. I would say it is expert-level use. Lawn care companies tend to not use it, but it is very useful. It can help take out creeping bentgrass in lawns if you apply it every other week for 3 or 4 weeks in a row, and it can hit quackgrass in the same way. It, like he says, it does a lot of really interesting things, and it's derived from the bottle brush plant, meaning it's really low environmental impact and impact on human health, but it is a professional grade product. It's difficult for an average home and gardener to use. So that's why we don't spend a lot of time talking about Tenacity.
Okay. So if you used it, you could suffer from using it, or is it just...
No. Its use rates are very small. It's easy to make. You have to have a good equipment, and then it's usually follow-up applications every other week, which is why lawn care companies tend to not offer it, because they can't get there that often. So if you feel like you're in the category of a very skilled lawn, you know, you're very skilled at this, Tenacity is an option, and I can be happy to tell you more about it by email. But I don't like to just hey, use Tenacity, it's going to work. It takes skill to use it. Say that.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Maya in Lone Rock. Hi, Maya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. We put down some grass mat to establish some new seeded areas, and the grass came up beautifully. It's now like probably about 4 inches tall, but it all lays down. And we're wondering, how do we mow that? Because the matting has not really been degraded yet. And I understand it takes about a year for that to happen.
Yeah, good question. Can you pull it up? Are the roots strong enough where if you pull up the mat that the won't pull up the grass with it?
I haven't tried that.
Yeah, I would do that. I like to pull those mats off almost as soon as I can. And I do that by, hey, I tug on this thing and the grass doesn't come off, I'm good to go, and I pull it off. And I do see people around my neighborhood making the mistake of just leaving them in and waiting for them to break down. They do break down. It takes forever. You get caught in the mower. So I like to, when I use those things, get them off as soon as you can, and definitely start mowing as soon as you can, too.
There you go, Maya. Thank you so much for calling. Well, Kim emailed that she wanted to take a moment to promote ducks as a fantastic lawn care amendment. Her ducks happily fertilize their lawn while nabbing all the slugs, grubs, and other insects they can find, leaving a healthy lawn and hole-free hosts. They need a bucket of water to dip their beaks in, some supplemental feed, and a safe place to spend the night. And they give her wonderful eggs and endless laughter. Ducks are the comedians of the livestock world.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
I love it. What do you, somebody wondered, what do you consider the definition of a healthy lawn?
Oh, yeah. What do I personally consider a definition of a lawn? I like to have enough density where I don't see any soil. So I like to have the ground completely covered because it's protected then. It protects the soil from erosion and runoff. That's the most important thing. I like to mow high, 3 inches, because that gives me deep roots, which means it's the grass is going to be more resilient to stresses, and I'm going to have to mow it less. Well, one of the things people don't realize is the lower you mow, the faster your grass grows, because it doesn't like to have short leaves. Those are its solar panels. It likes to have long leaves, but if it already has long leaves, it doesn't grow very fast. So I get to mow less. Certain weeds don't bother me. Dandelions, you know, if you have a ton of dandelions, it's an indication that your lawn is probably too thin. But dandelions here and there, no problem. I like clover. The clover Kentucky bluegrass is a great mix. So as long as I'm covering the soil surface and I have deep roots, I think that's my personal definition of a healthy lawn.
Okay. You've talked a lot about your research, but anything else in the way of research that you're up to these days or your office?
Yeah, I think we talked about this last time. We've been continuing to play with the robotic mowers, and that's really fun. We have one, a big unit that's out doing probably close to 4 acres at the OJ North Center right now. So, and it's cool to see it out there just kind of wandering around and cutting the grass. And, you know, what we've learned is they need to mow more often in the spring and less in the summer. So we're kind of playing around with the schedules. But overall, you know, the quality of these mowers is improving. And I think we're going to see a lot of robotic mowing in the future.
Well, Doug, this has been great fun. You've driven Jill Nadeau almost nuts with all of the questions that she's gotten from listeners to pass on to us. It's been great fun. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks, Doug.
Always a pleasure, Larry. Thank you.
Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science, but his PhD is in horticulture. And he, as I've said, he specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water resources, soil testing, and landscape irrigation. He'll be back and we'll do it again with him. Next week on Garden Talk, prairie garden expert Neil DeBowles back to talk about your gardening questions. Oh, hope you can join us for that next Friday at 11, and of course Saturday mornings at 6, and online anytime. Monday at 11, tech expert Beth Wendt will be back with us, so I hope you can join us for that as well. In the meantime, I hope you have a great weekend. And in the meantime, please stay with us. There's lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk.